This time in the Magic Kitchen, we're joined by author Jamie Della.
I'm Leandra Witchwood.
And I'm Elise Wells.
And welcome to the Magic Kitchen podcast, where we talk about magic, kitchen witchcraft, herbs,
and everything in between.
Magic Kitchen Podcast is funded and supported by thewitchwoodteahouse.com, offering a variety of hand-blended loose leaf teas as well as loose herbs for all of your ritual, spell work, wellness, and everyday enjoyment needs. If you would like to support this podcast while sipping a great cup of tea, head over to thewitchwoodteahouse.com and find the magic that's in store for you.
I can't believe that fall is seemingly winding down already where we're at. I'm visiting Pennsylvania for a few weeks, actually, because I missed the fall so much. So it's been really wonderful, but I'm sad to see it go. And this time of year is also special because November is Hecate's sacred month. Mm-hmm. She's celebrated monthly at deep nones, new moons, but November has a special quality. And it's interesting because we only know this from the Attica calendar, the ancient Greek calendar that the Athenians followed. We have a record of that. And every region of Greece had its own calendar. But the region that Hecate's festivals is known through is where I live in Greece. And it's funny that this is her season because, similar to most places in the Northern Hemisphere, November is the time of dying off. It's where things winterize and they go under. And as we know, Hecate is a chthonic deity. Her role is to, in mythology, her most well-known role is to guide Kore or Persephone down to the underworld in this time of year, at the autumn equinox, and to bring her back out at the spring equinox. So she's that liminal guide. Her and Hermes, they're the ones at the crossroads who can guide us to new changes. So if you have been feeling like your craft needs a restart or a jumpstart or just a new direction, don't ignore that feeling. You are being called to enter something new this time of year. If there's something you need to be doing differently, let's just say you will know. This time of year, the veil is thin. We say that for a reason. It's because even historically, the ancients knew this time was a deep one of transformation. And actually, in my community space, in the Magical Living community on Patreon, I'm sharing rituals there for every full moon, every new moon. And one of them is an autumn transformation ritual that could really be a big part of this change for you. It could be that physical spell jar that you can use to encourage that change. And actually, Hecate's featured pretty heavily in my November as well. I'm doing a presentation at Hecate Fest this weekend, as you're listening to this, if you're listening to this the day it came out. And I'm also presenting this same weekend at the Serpent's Key, a shop in Hanover, Pennsylvania, run by Beck Lawrence. They have been in the news for, as we talked about last episode, for a very antiquated anti-divination law coming to the forefront as per a conservative police chief's investigation of said shop. And then the New York Times picked it up, and then all the witches in the world supported Beck. And it's been like one of the greatest examples of community support in the craft that I've ever seen in my lifetime. And it's an honor to have a friendship with Beck and the Serpent's Key shop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have my teas in that shop. So I'm there frequently and I hang out with them. And
This whole idea that, you know, we have to abide by these outdated, ridiculous laws is just absurd. And I'm glad they're working to overturn it. And I fully support that.
Yeah. And we'll be sharing updates, like we said last episode, on ways you can get involved to help repeal this law against fortune telling, because it's not just against witches. It's also against Romani people. They were known for their divination practices. And this law dates back over 200 years. That's how outdated it is. It's in the same codex as how women are meant to dress and when we can leave our house unattended and all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's a really outdated law. And a lot of states have it and many countries have it. As I've shared on my social media, it's illegal as well in Greece, and as is witchcraft in many ways too. So there's a lot of legal changes that need to happen. And I'm starting to really feel this shift in our community towards supporting, towards, I guess, even general support. Like, I really was amazed. Beck shared quite a bit about who came out to support them. It wasn't just witches. There were priests and pastors from local churches, not only coming out to say their support, but also to invite Beck to share about witchcraft in their churches. I mean, it's been an incredible, unexpected turn of events for our community. And I think that's a sign that all of us should be looking around us and seeing how we can get involved in our communities locally.
And it is such a contrast compared to what I experienced in York, which Hanover and York were like right on the county line of each other. So we're really close to each other. And, you know, a few months ago, I was supposed to give a talk about herbs and tea. It was at a church, but for a garden club in our area. And I was pushed back against so hard that the treasurer of that garden club, the garden club in Red Lion, by the way, because I know a lot of people have been asking me and I'm not going to stay silent of who it is anymore.
They
went to the church and got me banned from the church, which is an evangelical church. And fine, that's fine. I don't need to speak at a church. But the whole purpose was that I could not speak at any garden club event. That was their goal. Because I do more than just tea and herbs, because I'm also a witch. And so my value to them is automatically diminished. And it really speaks to that mentality of, oh, love thy neighbor, except if you think they're going to hell, then they're not human anymore type thing. And that's a really huge problem in this dichotomy of right and wrong and in who has the right to their practices versus others. And that's what it's really boiling down to, is these outdated laws, outdated thinking, these people that are pushing back against people just minding their own business and adding value to the world in a different way other than the Christian model.
The fear-based agenda.
Right. It is all fear-based. It's all ridiculous. It has no real merit. And it's about power and control, brainwashing the people to believe that somehow we're dangerous. And even though we've existed for much longer than the Christian agenda, we're not the ones destroying the world right now, to be, in my opinion, frankly honest about it, because we're not the ones out actively seeking to harm others simply because we have a different view. We just want to be left alone. We just want to do our thing. We want to educate those who want to be educated. We want to guide those who want to be guided. And we're not, we're not out proselytizing. We're not out trying to seek and convert and any of that. We're literally minding our own damn business.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because people, including witches from other countries, because I think there's a uniquely American stance on, oh, I'm having my rights infringed upon. I will stand up against that. And we've seen that go to the toxic extreme with gun violence. Like, that's an unbelievable difference than what we're doing here as witches. But there in Europe, well, I can't say that France is pretty protest happy, but in Greece, let's say, I know that for sure. People are like, oh, well, just do it quietly then if you're worried about getting arrested. Oh, well, it's only divination's only illegal if you charge for it. So just don't charge for it.
Right. Oh, well, just don't organize.
Don't host. Don't join a coven or host events. Just do it alone in your house. And that's the point. That's why these laws exist. They don't exist because they're actually threatened by us. Initially, sure. when they destroyed the temples of Hecate and Hades and Persephone and Demeter at Eleusis down to rubble. That was fear. But today, the Christian church maintains their chokehold simply by keeping us from organizing with each other, simply by keeping us from starting covens, from hosting women's retreats in Greece for Greeks. You can go to women's retreats for foreigners. The Greek government's not interested in foreigners doing their own thing. Like, they want your tourist money, not worried about it.
Right.
It's about Greeks maintaining Greek Orthodoxy as the national religion. That's their concern. Which I also wanted to state that disclaimer, because some people are like, oh, I'll never go to Greece now. I'm like, no, that's not my point. The point is that Greeks are being oppressed by other Greeks, not foreigners. That's not an issue at all. So yeah, it's a crazy world. But Leandra and I were talking about this last week, how the witchcraft community, we talk about this a lot, right? There's different phases that the community's gone through in the past decades. Mm-hmm. And we have sort of left behind love and light at this point. Like, the idea that, oh no, we're healers. We're just healers. Don't bother us.
We're just here to be nice and yeah, fluffy bunnies.
This is just tea. It's no big deal. Like, now we're actually, you know, like, there's all kinds of support for hexing and mm-hmm. baneful magic. And while Leandra and I are definitely on the less extreme side of that,
Yeah. There
is, I mean, like, last episode was on blood and bone. Like, I'm literally out here sharing how I use menstrual blood in my practice. Like, we are no longer afraid to share these darker sides, which also comes from this support that we have from our community and the inclusion that we feel as being a part of the wider witchy community. So thank you for listening to our show. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for leaving 5-star reviews and helping us to grow and reach more people.
Yes.
And
it's amazing.
When you join our community spaces, you're helping us to proliferate that. You're helping us to continue
and keep this podcast going, because we mentioned in our intro that this is a completely self-supported podcast, that Witchwood Tea House is the main funding source. And anything else that you support us in with the community, or if you buy our books, or if you buy our courses and workshops and that sort of thing, that is additional support to keep this going. Yeah. And I think in that idea, going back to the idea of the darker side of witchcraft in general, you know, blood and bone and earth and roots and, you know, the icky things that typically most people think of, I think it helps us shed light on, it might be a little icky, but it's not this dangerous thing that we're made out to be. We're not out there slitting open veins and draining people for magic. No, we're literally using our own menstrual blood, or it's a simple prick of the finger of our own finger to perform a spell for ourselves. You know, we're not out there like, I don't know, like the old ancient societies where literally they had to rip somebody's heart out of their chest type thing. And I think that's those weird old messages are what carry over and cause all this fear, which lead into discrimination, which lead into these stupid, obscure laws that lead into, you know, people fighting so fervently to keep us out of the general community. And it's absolute mm-hmm. bullshit, and I'm done with it. So I hope you are too. So please, you know, join us in our community spaces, join us, you know, join protests, join anything you can to support the normalization of witchcraft. I think that's, instead of mm-hmm. proselytizing, just normalize it. Like, we're here. We're not going anywhere. We've been here for thousands of years. We still haven't gone anywhere. Even after inquisitions, even after all this death and destruction against us, we're still freaking here, and we're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Show up for the people you see fighting as well. Even when you simply save an Instagram video or you share a TikTok.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing.
Or you give that follow. Like, you have no idea how much that helps these algorithms push things out. And I really think that's the difference. Like, that's why the Serpent's Key had this wider community support. The New York Times was not going to be interested in Beck's story if Beck hadn't had so much support from
people sharing like everything.
Like,
yeah.
You and I, like all and of us.
That's a good point, because I always forget about social media and how important it is. the reach, the algorithms control a lot of what you see and of what I see and how many we can reach. So if you're not sharing our posts, if you're not commenting, if you're not engaging with us in some way, we won't go anywhere. It's not going to happen because the algorithm's not going to see us as vital. And that's sad. It's really sad that we're controlled by that much. But the community support is where it's at. You know, your support of what we share.
And if I'm missing you at the Serpent's Key this weekend, I will also be there on December 3rd sharing research from my master's degree on the history of witchcraft. And I'm doing an online workshop with Allie Knoll December 4th on locational astrology, astrocartography, how that affects your deity work and your magical practice. So I hope to see you at some future events. And while I'm in the States, it'd be cool to meet you at some of these workshops I'm hosting at the Circus.
I'm excited about that. Allie was in my workshop not long ago. She was buying some tea and we were talking. And I love her. She's so wonderful.
I know. She is. Best energy. Mystic and Holistic Podcast to listen if you're looking for more witchy podcasts to listen to.
Yeah.
Have you noticed your intuition and connection to your magic is increased in certain places? Or on the opposite side, that you can't seem to connect the same way at other places? What if I told you that there is a map of your life that you can use to connect with and develop your spiritual path? In a collaboration with Friend of the Magic Kitchen and host of Mystic and Holistic Podcast, Allie Knoll, I am offering an online workshop this December on deity work and locational astrology. In this workshop, we'll combine my knowledge of relationships with gods and goddesses and Allie's expertise as a professional astrologer and astrocartographer to explore how where you live and spend the most time affects not only who you've become, but also can be used to deepen your relationships with deity and spirit. Sign up at the link in the show notes or on seekingnumina.com/workshops. Early bird tickets are available through November 19th. We hope to see you there. Jamie Della is a priestess, healer, Chicana witch, and creativity mentor. She is the author of 9 books, including Box of Magic, a guided journey to crafting a magical life through witchcraft, ritual herbalism, and spell crafting. And most recently, the Book of Spells, The Magic of Witchcraft. And she is the author of the Herbal Journeys column in Witches and Pagans magazine. Learn more at jamiedella.com. So welcome, Jamie. It's really good to have you here.
Welcome, welcome.
I'm so excited to be here chatting with you two this morning.
So your latest book is Box of Magic. And like the title says, you've got a lot in this Box of Magic. So how did this book come to you? How'd you get the idea for it?
Thank you for asking. And again, thank you for having me on. I'm super excited to be here. This idea for this book originated while I was on a book signing tour for the Book of Spells. As we witches do when we see a witch shop, we stop in and get a reading. It's just a thing, you know? And so, and I just felt really strong about getting a reading at this, the Serpent's Kiss in Santa Cruz, California. And I went in there and it's just always been this great, very authentic, deeply rooted, lots and lots and lots of books, magical store that I've always gone to. And so I got a reading, and while I was in my reading, my mentor came to us in the middle of the reading. She started laughing. She had a very distinctive laugh, and she laughed. And the reader, Matt, was saying, okay, there's a woman in the room with us. She's a large woman. She's got cat-like eyes, and she just keeps laughing. I'm like, oh, that's my mentor. She had been gone for 13 years at this point. And she said, and Matt said, well, she says she wants you to get a picture of her and take her on your next book signing tour. And I said, okay, you know, you just do those things. You hear, you get the message, you know, you put a, I didn't have a picture of her because I just used to visit her. I visited her for 3 years in my early 30s and got one-on-one magical instructions. She's an elder Wiccan high priestess of the Druidic craft of the Wise of America. And so I put a post on Facebook saying, oh, does anyone have a picture of Connie DeMasters? And her granddaughter was still following me. And so she sent a post to her mom. Her mom got back in touch with me, and her mom, Alexa, and I are about the same age. And Alexa sent me this really great picture of her mom. And I said, oh, you know, thank you so much. So I printed it up at CVS, put it in a frame, stuck it in my bag. And I said, okay, you're on a book signing tour with me. Then COVID hit and everyone started cleaning up their houses and their attics and their garages. And Alexa started cleaning up and found this huge box of all her mom's magical curricula and education studies as far back as Dr. Leo Martello's correspondence school from 1970 to information from the ESP Institute to her own plays and spells and rituals. And she asked me if I wanted it. And I said, well, of course I want this. So she had asked all her children, all the grandchildren, if I could have their mother's information and her historical reference. So I got this big box of magic in the mail in May of 2020. And it sat in my room for the longest time. And I couldn't think of what to do with it because some of this information would be the Wiccan read, or some of it would be, you know, the charge of the goddess. And there were things in there that were clearly historical references, but nothing I could repurpose because it had already been printed. It wasn't, you couldn't do that. You can't do that. And so I was looking through for her handwritten information. And basically, I couldn't figure out how to put it together until I heard her finally come to me after 18 months and say, tell them about us, honey. But she had a husky voice, so it'd be more like, tell her about us, honey. And so I did. And so the book is a braided book. It has narration and memoir section and spells and rituals. To me, I kind of call it like if Tuesdays with Maury met with like Water for Chocolate, and put that in a Wiccan magical book. And that's what you would get with this. And it's based on the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell's hero's 12-step hero's journey, beginning with a call to adventure and ending with coming out of the broom closet. So that's how I put the book together. It was basically inspiration through a psychic reading where, you know, your mentor just says, just carry a picture with me, and you put it up to an altar and crystals and candles, and you say, now what?
Now what?
And you wait.
Now what? Those are the most magical words we ever speak. Yep. I swear. Because, I mean, that's how I ended up living in Greece. Like, I was just at the end of it all. And I was like, oh, I hate this job. I hate everything in my life. I was like over it. I could see the path I was on, and it was just going to get darker. And I just laid it at the feet of the goddess. I was like, now what? That's exactly, to paraphrase. Yeah. What is that? And she's like, you're going to move to Greece. I was like, excuse me. But for the next 18 months, I put it, you know, at the forefront of, okay, that's what I'm doing. And all of a sudden it all started to make sense. I saw how it could happen. And yeah. And I ended up writing a book too, but it was a novel and totally unrelated to Greece or anything else. It just came to me and needed to be birthed. But oh, that's a beautiful story.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love
Thank
it.
Thank you. Yeah. It was really fun. And then recently I was able to narrate it for an audio book.
Oh, good.
Oh, nice.
And I was so excited because, you know, it's, you know how it is when you read or listen to a book, you want to hear the author because they'll have the right inflection. Yeah. Like my favorite, of course, there's Jim Dale, who was like, oh, but you know, I even loved E.B. White reading Charlotte's Web. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just when you are giving voice to this story that's lived in your head. And it was really fun because, like I was saying, or gave a little bit earlier, Connie, my mentor, had a very husky voice. And I couldn't figure out how was I going to do that memoir where I'd have my voice and then her voice and then my voice. I wasn't sure how I was going to pull that off. And then right before we did the recording, I walked El Camino through Portugal to Santiago de Compostela. And when I got back, I got sick. And, you know, as a witch, and I was raised Christian Science, so we never went to doctors. So whenever I get sick, it's a mortal sin almost, you know, I'm like, how did I get sick? I don't get sick. And I got sick and I thought, oh no. And I ended up, I lost my voice before the audio recording. I was like, oh, dear goddess, I don't know what your plan is, but I'm not liking it. It's not fun for me so far. I'm worrying too much. This isn't fun. And it was just, you know, honey, the message was we couldn't slow you down. We had to get you sick. This is what had to happen. So just sit down by your fire, hang out, and let this pass through. Yeah. And so by the time, you know what I mean, right?
You're like, okay.
And so, and you're going along going, this better work out. I'm telling you, because you start bargaining the other way,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, you have one bargain. This is the bargain of like, listen, I've been following you lady for years. You know? And I would really like for a little, just help me out here. And of course she has, but still. And so I still have this husky voice for the most part. I'm drinking, you know, a cup of honey a week, and I'm just downing it like, and I get there to Long Beach where I had the met with her. I chose a studio that was 3 miles from the Eye of the Cat, where I did my studies in Long Beach and where I would go meet her, Connie, and get my magical lessons. And I wanted to be submersed. I went to visit her house, and I brought grass with me, and I had it on my altar while I was in the studio. And sure, if anything, if my voice didn't stay real husky, kind of Demi Moore like, Demi Moore. And you know, I had husky down. Husky was not a problem for me. And the Airbnb where I was staying was one of those elementary schools that has, you know, the cups of their mascot, mm-hmm. and it said Husky Pride. And I was like, all right, you know what you're doing. I'll never doubt you again. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's great because like the visual that you're giving me right now, and just a personal side note, is I grew up in Covina, California.
Okay.
In West Covina. So I was like, you know, 45 minutes from Long Beach and all of the things that you're talking about. So I'm like, I can see exactly where you are.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's pretty cool that, cause that Eye of the Cat was a big place. Yeah. Yes. So Connie was a teacher there and had been a student. And, that was some of the things of A Box of Magic with Judith was the one who ran Eye of the Cat. And some of the things in there was her homework assignments with the School of Wicca. From like, so some of the stuff in here, I couldn't repurpose anything, but gosh, it was fun to go through.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Well, and yeah. It's such a beautiful story of mentorship. Like one of the things we talk about a lot on the podcast is in this age of digital delivery, people yeah. aren't necessarily looking for mentors. And if they are, they're not really, it's a one-sided relationship. You know, somebody yeah. might tell you their favorite witch is so-and-so, but they're not actually communicating with them. So,
right.
you know, whether it's an online space or a physical space, physical is more effective, I think, for magic making together.
Yeah.
You really, yeah. it's getting lost and it's so important. So I'm glad your book is, I think it's timely because yeah. there's just the conversation that's not quite being had as much yet on how important mentorship is and how lifelong it is, how beyond lives yeah. it is.
Apparently.
She's still here. It doesn't stop when you die.
Yeah. Especially for those witches. She's like giggling right now. She's on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, because, you know, you would read, you'd hear about, you know, summer solstice, for example, and it would be like, okay, this is the time of the divine male. You're like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
But I don't like my husband. So how do I make that work? Yeah. And then you're like, oh, the divine male within me. Oh,
yeah, exactly.
And it's about living it. I think that's what a mentor does. Mm-hmm. And that's why I really, like you said, Elise, I really wanted to bring this idea of the mentorship back. I have this idea in my head, it's kind of a joke, a meme. If I could draw, I would make this meme. And in this meme, there's a beautiful garden and there's all these old hags on the porch, just fanning themselves, drinking lemonade because, oh my God, it was so hard. I got cut up by the rose bushes. Oh, I know. And they're just exhausted. And comes along a young maiden, plucks a rose and goes, look what the goddess left for me. And all the old hags are like, are you kidding me?
Sorry. I find so much irony and that is perfect. It is perfect because I think that's what the next generation forgets. They forget what was set up for them so they could enjoy things the way they do.
Yeah.
And it's not, and even, you know, my generation, you know, we had generations before us that set it up so that we could practice the way we practice, so we could learn what we want to learn and the way we want to learn it. It's so important. And Elise and I reiterate this all the time. And I don't think it's sinking in. I still see it. This thing where they're just like, oh, I'm just going to go on TikTok and I'm going to learn how to do that. But they're not understanding the nuance of it. They're, I was just in a conversation with someone about, going beyond the basics of magic. You know, everybody seems like they're on that cusp. They're right there on that cusp. They're looking over the edge, but they can't take that step because they don't know how. And the conversation we were having was it was around spell circumvention and the way I was taught to do it. And the way this person kind of came to their own realization because they didn't have a mentor. So they really had to go, they had to struggle to find this knowledge that it's not basics, maybe a little bit more advanced, but they had to struggle to find it. And if they had a teacher who knew about it, who knew how to transmute this energy, who knew how to redirect energy around a spell or around their house or whatever they're working on, if they had someone teaching them how to do it, she could have come to it a lot quicker and with a lot less of this, well, damn it, I should have known that, you know, kind of sense.
This is such a good point. When we're trying to connect with obscure or subtle energies of spirit, of place, it's hard to get that sense of belonging. Life, our doubts, anxieties, and our thoughts get in the way. This can make the connection harder than it needs to be. I know the struggle is real. When I first started on my path, I felt alone. I had no real direction. I didn't have any expert advice to follow. I wish I had that reliable guidance. So when you reach a point where you feel disjointed, unorganized, unmotivated, or unable to focus and walk your path, it is important to find the help you need, to find that support. If you need direction and support, please check the link in the show notes and find my spiritual direction program, where you can get one-on-one time with me and get the help you need. So let's get back to the interview.
Exactly. I ended up adding for the Book of Spells. I cut 25 when I updated it. I cut 25 spells and added 8 new ones, and one of them was Blessing Youthful Innocence. That idea of loving ourselves when you look back and you're like, how come you didn't know that? You know, working with the god Saturn, divine timing, Calendula, different things, because I think what's missing is people memorize the correspondences, but they don't see how they blend. It's like knowing what cinnamon does and knowing what sugar's for and flour, but what if I put them together? You know, what does this synergy make? What's the alchemy of all these correspondences coming together through my lens? You know, Elise, I love that phrase, as you put it earlier, before we started, we have a lens that we approach our craft through, and we're going to apply all those correspondences differently. And the other thing, it means one thing to be a witch when you're 11, another thing to experience Samhain at 17, another thing at 34, another thing at 55. And it's not about that you can't be a real witch until X amount of years or anything like that. It's about that experience and living it and how it drops deeper into our spirits, into our lives, and working from that perspective. And I feel like that in our rush age, like, well, just download it. It's like, you can't download it. Like, you can't, it's like trying to imagine what it would be like to hike, you know, Mount Everest. You can't just know what that feels like. You have to have the experience of it. And I feel like we've lost a little bit of that idea that that witchcraft and magic are an experience.
Oh, yeah.
And it affects you and changes you, so that the next season, when you go to put up your ancestor altar, there's something else you're going to add to it. Something that you got at the end of last year, kind of thing.
And I like what you mentioned about alchemy. because that's what it is. It's the alchemy, all magic, all experiences, this realm that we're in, the human having, you know, the human body having the spiritual experience, or the spiritual body having the human experience. It's all alchemy. And you're right. You can't know all there is to know until you experience it.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, like how you said, like, you know, your ancestor altar is going to look different next year. Like when I first started my path, well, of course I started solitary, and I read the books and I was afraid to try, but then I'd try little things, but I'd still be afraid of messing up. And my goal was always, okay, let's just get it figured out. Let's decide what I'm going to do every Litha. Let's decide what I'm going to do every Samhain. And that's just such a misnomer. Like that's never going to happen. Even though like my tradition, I'm initiated in an eclectic fairy tradition. So it has its roots in Wicca, but it's still kind of its own thing. I want to say we're 5 generations removed from Wicca now. and so like we still have inner court, outer court and degrees, but it's so different. Like, and my personal practice is working with spirits of place and land spirits in primary. I know they're just, it's addicting. It's addicting feeling like the joy and the unadulterated like presence around land spirits. So it just became my focus. But anyway, you know, we have these things we do as a coven every Sabbath, even though I'm a distance member at this point living in Greece, my coven being American, but I still do my own thing where I start with what we're going to do and then I transform it into something else. Like, but that is witchcraft. If we follow rote memory or exactly what's in our books of shadows, it's not going to be as meaningful, because you're right. Like experiential is the perfect word for an active path.
And if we're also, my mentor always said witchcraft is an agricultural religion. Wicca is an agricultural religion. Witchcraft is an agricultural path. Gotta get that straight. Like this winter here in the Eastern Sierra where I live, we had 10 back-to-back blizzards. We had an incredible winter. So our lilac is going off, and there was no lilac last year. So how could I, if I was wanting to do a lilac spell or make lilac lemonade, and it's going to be part of my solstice every year, but what if there's no lilac? You have to be able to adjust. And like you said, that the spirits of the land, I love how you brought that up. I found, I don't know if you've heard of, his name is Craig Chalquist, and he's with Pacifica, and he coined a term called terra psychology, which is the study of the soul of a place. And because
I'm writing this down,
I saw that because I love that you say that, because I grew up in Orange County where I was 10th generation to live there. Our family had arrived in the late 1700s. I used to think they were amazing. Now I realize they were just Spanish colonists. So, you know, there's that where I went to the castle where they were from and did a ritual and it rebounded on me, which was fine. I needed to get rid of some of that conqueror brain. But being in the same place where there's 10 generations of your family and being open to the spirits, being open to communication, and having all the ancestors talk to you when you're 8 years old, like, hey, talk to me, talk to me, talk to me. And you're like, oh my gosh. And then the river's talking to, and I was like, oh, everybody needs to stop. You know, like one at a time, please. But it's a fascinating experience to literally dive deep into it and humble yourself. You know, I moved up here and into the mountains, and the mountains, they were the Namu. Those are the people that live here, and they call this land Paihunadu. This is not the Eastern Sierra. This is not Mammoth Lakes. It's another place. And to really know that and respect that, so that when you go to gather from your backyard the lilac or the horsetail or the mullein, that you maybe you'll start singing a song that you don't even know what that song is. Maybe that there's something that where you're paying attention, the nature will respond to you. And maybe even the people will come through to you if you're really, really lucky, you know, and just being in that humble reverence and looking, okay, what are these 3 plant allies here to tell me? Lilac, horsetail, mullein, that's what's growing in my backyard right now. So put those together. What is this combination vibration of peace and strength and hearing. Oh, what happens if I put that all together? Oh, it's perfect for a podcast.
Damn straight.
Well, and it is because lilac is my favorite, and it does grow here, but very intermittently and not near my house. Near my house, I have jasmine, hibiscus. Like, I am not wanting for beautiful flowers, but lilac is my favorite. So I make my own lotions, and not like for sale or anything, just for me. And I do lilac because I just miss it. It to me recalls like the land that raised me, which was Susquehannock lands in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And we have lilac everywhere.
Do you?
It's just like a weed in Pennsylvania. It's amazing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Here, we have, there's three communities that are pretty close, but they're separated by like 1,000 feet in elevation going north. And then it drops 3,500 to the next. Then it's 1,000 where I live. Last, I'm at 7,000 feet elevation. The town above me is 8,000. The town below us is 4,500. So we all have very different climates, but just recognizing, you know, what's available now and how to use them each time. You know, I feel like when you are slow with plants, they will reveal themselves in a deep way. Like, you have the lilac and there's so much to do. I'm making lilac lemonade and some cookies, and I did a facial steam with lilac. Like, you just keep coming up with ideas, right? You're like, ooh, what else could I do? Oh, what else can I do with it? And then now I have the horsetail, and how does the horsetail taste with agave? How does it taste, the horsetail tea taste with, you know, sugar or honey, or the honey that's grown here with wildflowers, or the honey that's grown over there with orange blossoms? Just the nuances, like you were saying earlier, that's recognizing those and incorporating those and really feeling into them is where the juiciness of the magic is, you know. Absolutely. Versus the top level, you know, it's like scents, right? You have the top note, the mid note, the bass note. Mm-hmm. There's that same thing is true with magic in each of the holidays or the correspondences there, or the our crystals.
Yeah.
You know? So yay. Magic talk.
And this is the stuff I love. Like, I don't engage me in small talk. Like, talk to me about plants. Talk to me about drums. Talk to me about, you know,
yeah,
places. Thanks. And spirit. These are conversations I love, because mm-hmm. this is where I think we really start to realize the personal gnosis of it, but also the communal aspect of, oh, hey, you know what? I understand that a little bit better. I understand my experience now a little bit better. You know, talking about plants, like, I work with herbs, I make tea. So I'm always working with the herbs. I'm always talking to them. I'm always holding them in my hands and all these things. And I always felt like talking to a normal person, I've got my air quotes out, the normals,
the muggles.
The muggles.
Just easier. The muggles. Easier. Sometimes the onceslers, depending.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
You know, and they're like, you what with the plants? You talk what? You know? So I'm the crazy lady next door, right?
Right.
but yeah, they do. They reveal themselves to you when you slow down. And I think that's a key element right now, in related to your book and mentoring and going deeper with our craft, is slowing down, not trying to look for that instant gratification, that instant download. Not that they don't happen, but I don't think they happen as often as so many claim or proclaim to have happened.
And right.
When you are tapped in, you sense the bullshit real quick. But if you're not, then you're kind of like, you know, feeling around in the dark, and you're trying to just grasp onto something that makes sense to you. And that's fine, because that's how we, I don't know, start lighting that candle and start looking a little deeper and develop those critical thinking skills. Definitely.
Yeah. I had over some women the other day. We were going to harvest through our backyard. I have an acre property, and at the very end is a creek. So we were going to harvest through, and that's my Capricorn language. I requested that we sing to the plants before we went to harvest. Oh, and I also asked that, because of some of the fae information I've given, I don't like to harvest with iron or metal. I like to pluck with my fingers and find the branch that the plant wants me to take. And so
I do that too.
Yeah. And then if I absolutely are like, okay, you're going to hurt your fingers or whatever, then I will smoke bless and or water bless my blade, you know, so that, and then speak to the face.
Try a bone blade.
Oh
yeah. Bone blades are awesome for harvesting, especially like nettles and that sort of thing when you can't touch them.
Yeah. Oh no. No, don't touch those. I have a friend who eats them like little tacos. She gathers them and then just kind of like folds them up and then just pops them in her mouth like a little taco.
My one mentor who taught me magical herbalism, she taught me how to touch nettle and how to speak to nettle so it won't sting you.
Oh, nice.
And it's a process. Like you said, slowing down. You have to talk with it. You have to become very conscious of you and yourself and your thoughts as well as the plant. So it's this harmonious union that has to happen. And then you could just literally just pick it up with your hands and not get stung. And then the stingers are still there. They didn't go away. So when you're ready for the sting, you can use it. But yeah, it's one of those things. You try it. Like just
I love
very gentle.
That.
Very gentle, start talking to the plant and then start stroking the leaves and see what happens. But don't ever take your mind off of that process or else it will sting you.
Right. I did that the other day. I had a calendula and it was just growing so well. I was like, oh, and I was like going through my garden and picking and I came home and I'm like, oh, I need to grab one more. And I reached in and I grabbed it and it poked me. Because calendula has little pokers.
Yes, they do.
And it poked me because I wasn't, and I immediately knew, oh, I harvested without conscious slowing down, having an energetic conversation. And I think that's the other thing. Like when we had these women over, there was a little 3-year-old girl who was with us and she was so excited to meet the fairies because we were going to go and meet the fairies. I said, now I want you to understand you have to be very quiet and very still. And they could be really fast. And it might just be a little flicker that you see. And it might just, you know, she was looking at me like, no, I want the Disney fairy. I want him to show up and, you know, and preferably in pink because that's my favorite color.
Yep.
You know, like, and they're just looking. And it's like, to me, a young witch is looking for the pow, is looking for the big experience where the fairy will completely materialize. You know, the
and
world
there'll be glitter
shift.
And there'll be sparkles there'll be,
and song. There will be song.
Song, yes.
You know, and it's these subtleties that happen. You know, maybe it's a wave that you feel like some warmth or some cold, or a branch literally just kind of like flashes in front of you, like me, pick me. And then just always, you know, I love Braiding Sweetgrass as the book as a way to really dive into the humbleness of the honorable harvest and really being conscious about the fact that you're taking from somebody. Like I told this little boy once, I saw once, he asked me to pick this a burr from the tree. And I'm like, well, we have to ask his permission first. And he looked at me like I was crazy. Right. And I said, well, do you want someone to just come and pluck your ear off? Like, would that be kind of rude? And I was like, oh, I hope the mom doesn't hear me. So, but I feel like really recognizing the fact that we are one member of a big community is a really, and we're not the most important member. We're not like the keystone species that needs to exist here. You know, we are part of a community. And, you know, some of my teachers come from like Aldo Leopold, Sand County Almanac, you know, that idea that we are one member of a socio-ecology, that we are part of, like when we harvest, it helps the plant. So it's not this idea of us not belonging here. It's about belonging to each other and belonging to the land and belonging to the plants and the crystals as much as they, quote unquote, air quotes again, belong to us, right? We purchase them, we find them, but maybe they find us. I feel like that's an important thing that we forget sometimes, that sometimes these crystals or lavender, when you're feeling upset, they call to you. They're like, hey, come over here, Elise, you know, come over here, Leandro. This is where the calm is. This is where your strength is. Remember, I'm here for you. And it's not that we just go get that. Sometimes I really believe, especially when we develop a relationship, and that's why we slow down to be with the plants so that they trust us for that honorable harvest, so that they trust us to utilize their magic in the most beautiful and divine essence way that we are actualizing ourselves through the process of working with our allies in the world.
Yeah. I think that's also why leaving offerings is such an important act.
Absolutely.
It connects us deeply. It shows that we're not, that it's not just about us. And it has to be thoughtful. You know, you have right. to be thoughtful with it. You have to like, well, what would be enjoyable right now? What would be beneficial? You know, do I just need to go water a tree and that's my offering today?
Right.
Simple. Yeah.
Yeah. When I would take my boys with me, because we found, you know, finder patches that have, where I grew up, there were some patches of white sage that we could go take a branch or two just for our needs, you know, no over-harvesting. I don't buy it in a store. You sing to it. And you, like I was taught, you only wrap it in a certain color. And there, you know, and part of that offering, I would tell the boys, was our saliva. So my boys were like 3 and 5 at the time. And they're like, I can spit on the plant? Like, for reals?
Yes.
And it was like, yeah. So I was like, oh, good. They're all this little patch is going to be blessed for now. You know, and making it playful. I think that's also really important. You know, we get so nervous in the beginning of our craft. You know, are we going to do it wrong? Especially when we work with herbs, we've been conditioned to not take care of ourselves, to just go to a doctor and have them tell us what to do, you know? And what about if we had that nettles tea, if we were feeling inflammation, you know, is that going to hurt me? It's like, no, no.
And you're not drinking a gallon of it, right?
You know? Right. Exactly. Yeah. That could be
even different. Then, I'm not even sure how much damage it would do, you know?
Yeah. I think you'd just pee it right on out.
Mm-hmm. He'd be yeah. That's always what I'm like. Flushed. Oh, everything's a diuretic. So that's your worst case scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the most part.
Right.
Yeah. And I like that about saliva. Mine is usually my hair, because right. I feel like that's also like, if I'm taking a couple of leaves or fruit or flower, and I, you know, like a tree has much of that to share. So I'm also taking some of my hair as trade, because it's, you know, it's of me as much as I can give in that moment. It's so special that. And we always have it with us.
It's although easy.
Recently, I also love being able to offer song. And I had a really nice opportunity a couple of days ago, like recently, and I'm still wearing all my keys, like my earrings, my necklace. I went to Hecate's cave with a friend of mine who was visiting, and she's a Wiccan high priestess. So I don't know much about the initiation process, and she can't tell me, of course, but she said there is a lot of discussion of like Hecate's well, Hecate's cave, Persephone's ascent and descent. And I took her to Eleusis, which is the site of the Eleusinian Mysteries that I assume is probably where the initiation gets their text from. So it was so powerful. And we were standing there and she takes my hand and we just started singing. We both just started singing the same song, classic. We all come from the goddess. And we just sang. It was a rainy day, which we're not supposed to get rain in June. As of recording this, it is like summer solstice. And we had rain. So no one was there. Like, it was just the most magical afternoon. Mm. And sometimes that's the gift of the land spirits, is just unexpected peace like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, coming with that level of respect, I believe the land spirits recognize that. They recognize that conscious respect. And sometimes respond like with a little downpour that's going to keep the muggles, as it were, away, or the people that aren't coming with that same level of consciousness. Yeah, we sang
even the
we sang I'm the sorry. Circle is. I'm sorry, I was going to say we sang the circle is open when we harvested to illustrate that idea that of the life, death, of the birth, death, rebirth process that these plants will now live in us. And just introducing that concept, I didn't used to like that, because when you wake people up, sometimes they don't like it, but now I find it really interesting. I don't find myself doing really deep dives into the mysteries, like the historical references, I will go sometimes, but just the initiation for me, it's more solitary, and I dip in and out of covens. That's kind of my play. And, but the idea that we can just evolve as we go. I actually just lost my train of thought. So like, where was I going with that? But, I know what it was, is this idea of being a bridge. You know, I always coming out in 2000, my book, the Wicked Cookbook came out, and then I shot a pilot to host a cooking show in the summer of 2001. And it was going to be a witchcraft cooking show. So it was me. I shot the pilot, and Patricia Telesco was the other possible witch that was going to do this. And then 9/11 happened and it was canceled. And then here we were, or here I felt, completely out of the broom closet. The doors slammed shut behind you and you're like, oh, damn, you know, because I was living in an area where they had been passing out KKK pamphlets. It was very Christian. So I went and had, I carved a big crescent moon in the side gate, and I wrote witch's heel and soap in the back of my door. I'm like, if you have any questions, come here. I gotcha. Okay. You know, because I figured at that point, you know, sometimes you need to be really bold. And now we can talk about a full moon ritual that we went to in the elevator or in line at a coffee shop. Yeah. And I wanted so bad to break the glass ceiling. So when the Book of Spells was in Target, I thought that was it. We've reached, you know, you could go get your toilet paper and magic, you know, the same place. So I just feel I'm so thrilled that we are here, that we can share this in an open way, and to do the work now of to deepen what feels like a very superficial practice to people who don't understand, and really show that it's not about, you know, casting spells on people. It's not about collecting a bunch of crystals and all these elements. It's about living it as much as possible. And that's what's exciting to me, that we're hope, and with these conversations, hopefully getting there, telling people that, yeah, it's a bit more of a journey than maybe you thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you said about, it's about deepening that practice. It's not just about the spells. It's not just about your spirit guides, or it's about deepening that practice, making it that way of life, so that when you step out your front door, you are empowered and you are held. And you know that the universe has your back, you know, whatever the universe means to you.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. It's that, I think when you're a witch, you never walk alone. You know, you always have, like you said, your spirit guides, or, you know, you're wearing your keys, or, you know, I've got usnea I'm wearing because we were going to talk about herbs, these earrings. Oh, and you wear the soul, like all these amulets but they all mean something. You're not wearing them for show. You're wearing them because they remind you of that strength that you have within and all the allies that are supporting you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. And that's like how I feel about connecting with land spirits, is like, it's like pulling a warm blanket on a cold night, you know, like when you have that familiarity with them and you know that you all have the same interests at heart in protecting this land you're on, or when you're visiting a new place, knowing that the welcome that you get is authentic, and the energy that you're feeling, it's so different from your home energy. Like it's experiential. I love that word. And it's very, I don't know. I think it's interesting about witchcraft is you start formal. Everybody starts formally. They're like, how do I learn? Let me write down all these correspondences. But then it starts to just, then it gets playful. And then it becomes, I guess, folk craft is the best word for it. Like we return to roots that way. Because I don't often sit down and do a spell that I've, you know, crafted out for these specific things. Like, I really don't. It's like, I need this thing and I'm going to do what I can to, you know, manifest it, if we can use that word for it, or to give the energy, to ask for the energy to carry out something that I need to do. But I'll keep it in my mind and I'll ruminate on it. And then all of a sudden, there will come a moment and I know that's the moment to do it. I didn't have to look in my witch's planner to find the right astrological time, but it'll happen. I'll feel the energies right. And it will be, I can cross-reference it later and say, oh yeah, you know what? It was in Gemini and I was bringing balance. Like I can do that later, but it wasn't like, it becomes so intuitive.
It is. And that's why I find it like sometimes hard to do the social media where you're like, okay, create a post of an altar. First of all, I'm like, part of me is like, why would you do that? You know, like, why would you take a picture of your altar? And the second part is like, but they're everywhere, you know, like, and I'll find those where you look around. I go, oh, look, I cast a spell up there. I didn't even like right after my son graduated from college, I looked up and there was I forgot I had put like a little spell together where it was a picture of him, an iron railroad spike and the pennant of the school that he was going to. And like a mama energy statue that I had. And when he graduated, I went, oh, we held him in place. We kept him at school, not leaving for the hard times. It was like this little mini altar I had put up when he was struggling in his last semester. And it's just this, when you look around and you find the magic that you create everywhere. Or like you said, like I have this picture of Kali over here that a friend painted, and you have your little bowl where you like, what does she want today? Does she want flowers? Does she want water? Does she want a song? And then you look over and you're like, wow, I haven't been able to make a decisive decision about something. And you're like, oh, my Kali altar hasn't been tended to in a while. Maybe if I go sit with her for a little bit and I can embody her energy and be with her presence and recognize what it needs, what I need to be decisive, to be that person that just slices through the BS and straight to the truth of the matter of whatever my block is or my goal or whatever it is that's fuzzy in my brain, she'll make it clear for me. And those altars are everywhere all the time. And I love that part. And like you said, finding out later on, you're like, oh yeah, I did that at the ring. But it's because you live in it and you recognize where the moon is at or the astrological sign, or you use it for your own, you know, where people say, well, what if I could only do it on a Saturday? And that's for banishing, you know, but I want to create something. Well, then you banish your obstacles, you know, like you find your way to work.
You may have noticed that here at the Magic Kitchen Podcast, we don't have sponsored ads. That's because this is a fully listener-supported show. We do what we do for you, dear listener, and when you join my magical living community on Patreon, you're supporting all the time and energy that goes into setting up podcast interviews, writing articles and rituals, my paranormal mystery novel, and all that I do. And in exchange, you're getting over 10 exclusive journal prompts, rituals, witch tip videos, meditations, and more each month. If you love this podcast, consider joining my magical space. I can't wait to meet you and be an even bigger part of your magical journey. Go to patreon.com/Elise Wells or follow the link in the show notes. So I wanted to ask you about your path that you mentioned, the DCWA.
Yes.
Is that the right acronym?
Yes.
I've never heard of this path. I don't know what rock I'm living under, but could you just tell our listeners about that?
Well, the Druidic Craft of the Wise of America is the DCWA. And this was the practice that was happening and being taught through the Eye of the Cat in Long Beach, a Wiccan witchcraft practice. That, you know what, honestly, that it was, how do I put it? Like, I was an honorary initiate. Like, I didn't have to go through all the steps because I came from an eclectic path. Because I, and Connie, I asked her, I'm like, do you want me to step through the steps? What am I supposed to do? And she's like, no, you got it. You know it. It's a download for you already. You came in with this information. You've been practicing. My grandmother was a psychic reader. So I grew up with the idea of soul families and what portals were and all these different ideas of spiritual conversation. So The DCWA is a Wiccan practice where we follow the sabbats. We follow one of the things that Connie did right before she crossed is we did this knot work magic for each of the sabbats. I'm showing it to you, but you can't see that on the podcast. I'm sorry. so for me, it is a practice that is deeply rooted. It began very formal. You know, it would be when you would call in the quarters, it was all hail ye guardians of the Eastern Quadrant. It was very formal, very gardenerian feeling to yeah. it. And so, right. You know, and I like in the last one, you gals were talking about Crowley, and, you know, Crowley had taught some of the people. So there were some of his teachings involved in the practice itself, but I never saw the Book of Shadows. So I can't tell you I wouldn't, you know, the initiates and the secrets and the whatnot, whatever of yeah, it, yeah. But I can just say that it had that male feeling to it, you mm-hmm, know? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I never like did all the details of it. I kind of played around in my fairy goddess, you know, well, I like that. And I like that a little bit of a smorgasbord of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if that's maybe not a real solid answer, but for me, it's a practice of Wicca that like one of the things that was in the book was, I don't know if you've heard of Eli. He was considered the person who brought this DCWA over here, Father Eli. And so he had his book of wisdom that is this really esoteric book that was from 1975. So it was pretty much bringing in a lot of, again, that male energy. And I feel like it was, you know, it was the questions that you ask before you do a spell, like, is it necessary? Have you done everything on this plane? Do you accept the responsibility? Will it harm anybody? So a lot of those kind of rules, but guidelines, I guess, to watch for. And at least in my practice, it was a lot of the light and not a lot of the gray or dark. As it were, in some practices, it was a lot of the, what we used to call white light and pink bubbles. That was the term that we used to use back in the day. Like, are you all white light and pink bubbles? I'm like, yeah, but I can kick your butt if I need to. So, you That's know, there's, you can like switch it up if you need to, right? You have that old energy of kind of a dominance that you can tap into. If you feel some baneful energy around you, but the play itself is about, or the way of living this craft is through the sabbats and the esbats as well, but primarily we're understanding the magic of the sabbats. That was my training that I experienced.
Oh, very interesting. So it's Wiccan, not Druidic in the sense of like orders of bards, ovates, and druids.
Not as much. Totally no, different. I think, yeah, okay. at least not in the teachings that I received. So yeah. I knew you were going to ask this question and I should have looked through the book a little bit more. So in the box, but she's going to ask me, I got to figure it out. But so I apologize. I'm going to do some more research because I feel like I want to know that. How do I put this? Like that information, that line of study, it was embedded in the magical study that I learned, like what is Wicca? What is witchcraft? What is your responsibility? There was just kind of this schoolmaster feeling to it. But when it comes to the druidic aspect of it, like where exactly is that line going? I actually don't know. So yeah. I want it now. I'm like, okay, now I got to call some of my coveners and go, all right. The question I never asked.
Well, but actually I think that's a common like confusion point because like even, so I'm very interested in druidry coming from yeah. Obod, which is, you know, its own thing. It's a correspondence course. And then there is druidism, which in my estimation so far is that's like American version and it's super ceremonial, whereas right. druidry from the UK is much more like land spirit connection, getting out in nature. Like it's actually not even a religion. It's just, we put nature first and that's what everyone has in common.
Right.
And then there is druidic paths, which seems to just be like an unregulated word. It's like when you go to the grocery store, you can't say organic unless you have approval, but you can say all natural.
Right.
And it can be corn syrup.
Yeah. It was very ceremonial. See, that's my problem too, is I learned magic through kind of a granny magic kind of way, or granny wisdom, you know?
So is this the Chicana background?
No, the Chicana background is the Mexican. My matriarchal line goes deep into Mexico for 7,000 years. And so me following the woman's line through my Chicana, and the reason I say it that way is because that's the XI, which shows more of the indigenous part of Mexico versus a CH, which is, you know, a colonized way of saying it. So for me, it's the Chicana is a nod to the grandmothers who I constantly research because I can, because our family history in Orange County is very well known. The San Bernardino Mountains are named after that ancestor. Yerba Linda, the town, is named after the ancestor. Like there's lots of influence there. So there's lots of opportunity to find out about these people, but it was very ceremonial. You know, I didn't even realize until I read Damien Eccles' book, High Magic, that that's what I had been learning. I'm like, oh, I thought it was just granny magic. because I didn't go through the serious part of it.
Yeah.
The serious initiation part. I was welcomed in as my mentor, the elder high priestess's favorite little student, but didn't do some of the more ceremonial stuff because that wasn't appealing to me, even though it was there.
Yeah, I relate to that.
Yeah. And then, you know, like you said, we start formally. That's how I would start this commanding of calling in the directions and calling in the elements. And we all started with the cab cross before every, you know, that was all part of it, you know? And so for me to like call in the quarters now and do it in a way that's softer, maybe use bells, it's like, okay, bringing in the feminine now, you know? And I feel that that's really what the shift was in between what I brought to the tradition is that softer, more folk, more fae-like energy. And I won't say the fae in the deep way that I know you practice. I have, two of my best friends who read through a box of magic are initiates in the Fae with your BOS is like 500 pages or something like this. It's like, it's a lot. So, yeah, but that's my study is, like I said, with the, I have the ceremonial influence and that really works with my double Capricorn. Like I get it. That uber structure makes sense to me, but then being able to play within that structure and really expand out and bring in my humanity into the ceremonial, the high magic, the structure of, you know, the magic of how do I heal from this energy? How do I ascend into a higher consciousness, more of my divine essence? That's usually where my magic goes. So the high magic was always part of it because that's where I always put it. You know, of course there's sometimes you're like, okay, I need to get a new house. And you have your earth magic that is something very physical that you need. But for me, a lot of my magic tends to be directed towards elevating my thought and my consciousness.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I totally get the like eclectic jumping around need because I literally can't stay in one country. Mine is like jumping between land spirits, but it's the same thing. Like I think like at the heart of all of our practices, it has to be eclectic somehow. Like we have to pull from multiple places or else, I mean, actually, none of our practices would exist if somebody somewhere hadn't thought to do that, because there's just not enough left over. Like, you know, I live in Greece, but there's not a lot of people practicing Hellenic worship here. Sadly, there really isn't. It's and the three groups that do exist claim that they only do what the ancients did. And they're actually really racist. They're xenophobic. Mm. They won't allow anyone to join. I'm not even allowed to join, even though I'm Greek and I have citizenship and my dad's lineage goes back to before the revolution. But because my mom's American, they want nothing to do with me. Oh, so wow. It's a very, very, and actually they lobby in Congress against groups that aren't them having rights. So I can't host a retreat at a temple, but they could only. So it's very exclusionary. So when people say like, oh, I only practice traditional Hellenic, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? Because you're not actually Hellenic. So they wouldn't want you, you know, and that's not saying you shouldn't practice what you want to practice in Hellenic paganism. I think it's open to everybody. It definitely is, because the Greeks themselves were all about spreading it. They were like major colonizers. So like, it would be crazy to make that a closed practice, which technically the traditional ones are now closed. Like, it just gets so complicated.
I think so too.
Always like, we got to build our own things. Take what you want from where you want, and it's your garden to populate.
And make it yours. And I think too, there comes a time where, like, how far back do you need to prove? Like, I'm going to do.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I'm going to weave a sun's eye. We called him a sun's eye today for the solstice, because if I said God's eye, they were afraid that that would be considered appropriation. And I said, from who? And they said, the Huichol, the native of indigenous people from deep in Mexico, where my matriarchal line goes. Yeah. Even though I wasn't raised Huichol and I'm not initiated, so I can't say I am, but how far back do you have to go before you can say that's my ancestry? Like, like at what point can I say I can weave ojo de Dios? When can I say I can do that? Or do I just say, I'll just call it a sun's eye, because for me, it's the divine male, and I'll make it my own. You know, and that's, I feel being aware of that appropriation and being claiming this is, you know, this is a practice. This is what it is over here. It's very similar. It's running parallel, but I have made it my own. And at what point do we get to do that?
Yeah. Well, and I study syncretic universality a lot, like how do things overlap in other cultures, and why? Maybe it's because they traded with each other for thousands of years, or maybe it's because they actually were the same people that migrated and just, you know, some went north, some went south. And really, like, the answer is both and always. Like, even these DNA tests, like I said, my dad's line is Greek, like they're all Greek, but they're also Egyptian. And the Egyptians of today and the past 500 years, like my dad's family are, they're not the Egyptians of, you know, Hatshepsut and Cleopatra, but the land is that they were raised on. So, and their history is still that. So it's a very complicated question. And I think, like, my lens is history. So I'm always looking for how we got where we are in spirituality. But the answer is always, it was eclectic. Like, that's the short answer to any practice or path or belief that we can find to research.
And I think
it's amazing.
I think it's amazing. And I hope it's empowering to people to realize that they can make it their own versus trying to hold it to, if I'm not being faithful enough to the DCWA because I decided to sing in my invocations instead of like commanding them, you know, or that I morphed a little this way and morphed a little this way. I feel like making it your own is harder to stand on because you don't get that certification of like authenticity, you know, but if it lives in you, that I think that's the hardest part too, because one of my most favorite and most challenging ideas about witchcraft is that you are your own best teacher. And I find that when you're on the path to begin, that's so frustrating because only you know how those correspondences live in you. Only you know how all you might like a smoky quartz or a clear quartz. Only you know that. But to empower ourselves and to give ourselves that authenticity without also like changing the words and looking at your elders and going, you don't know what that word is. Well, that's what we call it today. You know, allowing, yes, you can evolve, but that doesn't mean you get to be snotty because you changed, you know, a word that we didn't use 10 years ago. You know, So yeah, I love the eclectic idea and really going where you're drawn and bringing it in and letting it morph within you.
Are you enjoying the show? If you are, we'd really appreciate a 5-star review. It helps us to reach more listeners like you and to keep doing the Magic Kitchen podcast. Thank you. So Jamie, where can everybody find you and your books?
People can find me on my website at Jamie Della, J-A-M-I-E, Della, D-E-L-L-A.com. And I'm also on Jamie Della Writes on Instagram, and I just started TikTok and Facebook with my boomer friends. And you could get the book anywhere, and at Amazon, on Bookshop. It'll be on Audible and Barnes and Noble. The best thing you can always do, though, is to support your local bookshop. Please go to your local bookstores, order the book directly from there if you can. And I'd really appreciate it, because it's a beautiful box of magic waiting for you. And the idea of mentorship and feeling guided on this practice so that you really are never alone.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on. This was wonderful.
Yes. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. This is so much fun. I could talk forever to you too.
Oh, good.
I know.
Merry meet.
Merry part.
And merry meet again. Thank you for joining us on the Magic Kitchen podcast. Please visit my website, leandrawitchwood.com, for news, information, and more episodes.
I'm Elise Wells, and I can be found at Seeking Numina on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and seekingnumina.com. That's Seeking, N-U-M-I-N-A.